My name is John Bishop. My career to date has involved regular conversations with head teachers and senior school leaders. This is now my 20th year of doing this, and I've learned so much during this time. In fact, I've been able to build several successful educational businesses based on these professional and sometimes personal conversations with head teachers. I often share the wisdom gained from these discussions with colleagues including managers, business partners, health mentors, and other school leaders. As a result, many introductions and connections have been made that have led to exciting and successful collaborations. Now I think it's time that these conversations are shared with a much wider audience. This podcast series consists of interviews with former, current, or future head teachers. Some of these I've known for a long time, whilst others I met for the first time whilst recording their interview. So who should listen to these conversations? Head teachers, who would like new ideas from colleagues who've experienced similar challenges to themselves. Aspiring head teachers who can learn from colleagues who have gone before them in the role. Teachers who want to better understand the pressures experienced by their leaders and managers. Policymakers who may benefit from what's really happening on the front line. And anyone who wants to get inside the minds of school leaders who play such an important role in our society today. All guests have been chosen based on an individual theme which will be shared during their introduction. These themes are of particular relevance to my current work projects of well-being, mentoring and staff culture within education. During the interviews, we also get to know the person behind the role. What made them choose teaching as a career? Are there any key moments or turning points during their career that are responsible for their success? How do they switch off from such a demanding and all-consuming vocation? The podcasts are generally between 60 and 90 minutes long and are perfect for you to listen to whilst commuting to and from work, or whilst walking the dog at the weekend. I hope that you enjoy these interviews and feel free to share any thoughts or follow-up questions on the website or Twitter to keep these conversations going. This interview with Ray and my visit to the Spinney was long overdue. I've known Ray for some time and we often see each other at conferences and events. We always have interesting, thought-provoking and brilliantly wacky conversations, and I've always been amazed by Ray's energy, passion and creativity. After researching Ray's work further, I was impressed by her child-centred philosophy and approach to partnership development. More importantly, how this approach has led to excellent school and academic performance. We finally managed to confirm a date in our diaries, and our recorded conversation certainly didn't let me down. Before our discussion, Ray gave me a tour of the Spinney, where I met a number of staff and children from all year groups. Both were extremely confident, articulate, friendly, and unapologetically happy. Our conversation is just over 45 minutes of magic, where we talk about many topics ranging from neuroscience to Tang Soo Do Karate. I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation as much as I did recording it. And remember that you can stream directly from this website, listen through iTunes, or download the audio file to listen through your own media player. It's my pleasure to introduce Ray Snape. So, Ray, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Lovely to see you here today, John.
Yes, it's a pleasure and thank you for the invitation.
It's our pleasure.
I've been wanting to visit the school for a long time now and we just had a quick tour and it's been great to meet some of the children.
Yeah,
and
good.
I've seen how confident they all are,
splendid.
How happy they all are.
Oh, I like that. We like happy.
Yes, it's been great to have a tour around. So first of all, then tell me a little bit more about the school and in particular some of the things that you were telling me about when we were walking around the school about some of the projects and partnerships that you're involved in.
So the Spinney Primary School is a single form entry school in Cherry Hinton in Cambridge. We would describe ourselves as a happy school, a creative school. We're also, in Ofsted terms, an outstanding primary school, but I think our focus is really about having a whole child view and a very creative curriculum that the children really enjoy and, importantly, the teachers really enjoy.
Now, we've met a few times through Whole Education and Ashoka and different events.
That's right,
so.
Yeah.
I know a lot about your own individual philosophy. I was part of one of your workshops
at the
Whole Education Conference as well. So you got me up on my feet doing different things in a workshop there. But where has this philosophy come from, focused on the whole child? Is it something that's been part of your career since as a teacher? Is it something you've developed over time?
That is such a brilliant question. I think it's something that's developed over time, and I know that it's evolving. And on my door, it says head learner, And that is very authentic about how my approach to learning about curriculum is and my approach to learning about pedagogy. I think it's really important to be very open-minded and open-hearted to all the different ways of teaching a child in order to find the best fit for children. And so my philosophy keeps evolving, keeps developing over days and over months and over years. And I was just having a conversation with Susie Young, who you've met and met a few times, who's the Kite Teaching School Alliance coordinator. And she was asking me about blogging. We were having a conversation about writing articles. And one of the challenges for me, but I think it's not unique, is that you get to a point where you think, how am I sure about what I'm saying? Because tomorrow I might learn something new. Tomorrow I might think something new. And that's always the risk about not wanting to get to a position, an authoritative position, because you have to recognise that the more you know, the more you know there is to know.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know if I've answered your question. I didn't get to a particular viewpoint on a certain day. I think it's an ongoing journey.
It's an ongoing process. And you've mentioned the Kite Teaching School Alliance there. So just tell me how the Spinny were involved in the Kite.
So in 2014, the Spinny became a national teaching school, and we were given the opportunity to create an affiliation of schools. We have about 20 schools within the Alliance, and who join us a greater or lesser extent depending on need, or alternatively it's more about coordinating CPD events or events for leadership. And we have the Alliance is called the Teaching School Alliance, Kite Teaching School Alliance I should say, with a view that it's north, south, east and west, and is inclusive and available for any school that wants to work with us.
And what was your rationale behind getting involved in that? Because obviously as a head teacher you've got lots of priorities here within the school already. Yes. And what has that added to what you do here at the Spinny?
When we had our last Ofsted, we were very fortunate in that the lead inspector gave us some fabulous words. He said that we were forward thinking and we were outward reaching. And he identified that several years ago, and it's something that has given us a way of being and the journey that we've continued on. So it's within our DNA as a school to be forward-thinking but also outward-reaching and looking to learn with and from other colleagues. As I might have mentioned, or as we discussed previously when we walked around, we are a single form entry. We just have 30 children in each cohort, which by virtue of that means we just have one teacher per year group, with the exception of two classes where there is a co-sharing, co-teacher sharing. And it's really important for our colleagues here that they have the opportunity to share ideas and learn from other colleagues. And so it's given us a great opportunity to collaborate with other schools that may be geographically close to us or further away. And through those partnerships and networking, we become stronger. I saw something that captures this idea very, very well. So if I have an apple and you have an apple, we trade apples and we both have an apple each. However, if I have an idea and you have an idea and we share those, we've both got two ideas. And so the opportunity there of teachers learning from each other and strengthening their professional knowledge is a very powerful one and a very compelling one.
Yeah, that's coming through loud and clear now in the current educational landscape.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think it's more important for schools not to be isolated into as many partnerships as they can manage.
Absolutely right. And we are very into partnerships. You mentioned previously about whole education. We're really proud to be a whole education partner school, and we're also proud to be an Ashoka Changemaker school. And we became an Ashoka Changemaker school in 2 years ago, and that's given us the opportunity to meet some really amazing people and for it to influence our thinking here in the school.
Yes, I was at one of the events and we bumped into each other there, and there are only a handful of Ashoka Changemaker schools, I believe.
Right. There's 15 at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what does being involved in that network, what does it give the school?
I think it is a mindset that it specifically gives us. So perhaps the traditional way of thinking about schools is as a train track, and it's a one directional, and there are going to be very clear outcomes. In joining the Ashoka Changemaker network of school, which is based on the principles of social entrepreneurialism, there's an opportunity to think about schools as creative, innovative spaces where pretty much anything can happen as long as it's improving opportunities and outcomes for children. So having the opportunity to work with social entrepreneurs and having a much more creative mindset stimulates the thinking, stimulates the connections and the opportunity and the networking. And as a result of that, we've been able to bring some really exciting programs into the school, such as the Mind Up, Goldie Horn's Foundation, the Mind Up project, and other lovely connections, such as with Michael Sarney and Bite the Ballot. It's really great to know about what these change makers are doing in the broader picture and how they're working to empower pupil voice.
Wonderful. You mentioned Mind Up there and Bite the Ballot. Can you just talk in a little bit more detail about each of those, if those who aren't familiar with them?
Yeah, so if I talk about Mind Up first, Mind Up is a program that was started by Goldie Horn, and I understand, I was really fortunate because I was able to meet Julia Organ, who is the director. She's the UK director for Mind Up. And she explained the story that when the terrible things happened in 2011, Goldie Horn was really shocked by what was happening with the world. And so she made a decision to reduce her commitment to the movie industry, to focus on resilience and optimism and ways of children developing skills proactively so that they would have a set of tools to manage the challenges of what's happening around in society that they could feel fairly powerless to address. And we've had training, and we've had really great support from the Minds Up Foundation, and Julia came here and her colleague Rachel came here to train the staff here, the whole staff, the governors and the TAs, the midday supervisors, and the teachers were involved in the training. And it's a set of activities alongside learning how the brain functions, the role of the amygdala, the hippocampus, and the prefrontal cortex, and learning how the brain works and how it impacts on how we feel. And alongside that is a mindfulness activity where the children listen to a chime and have a meditation three times a day. It's not a religious meditation, it's a purely secular meditation, but it's just a few moments of mindfulness where the children learn about breathing techniques and they learn to self-regulate so they're able to better manage their learning.
And is it too early to notice any impact from that program, or have you seen impacts already?
I think that we haven't set out to look for impact, but I would say generally, because we were probably quite a calm school anyway, quite a happy, calm school, but I think it's adding into what we're doing. In what we do know is that parents are reporting back to us that where things have got stressful at home, they have been guided by their children that they shouldn't over worry. This is their amygdala making them agitated, and parents being given advice about how they can manage their own emotions. So we know that there are positive ripples going out into the community.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's great.
And Bite the Ballot?
Well, Bite the Ballot is... Michael Sarney has been a really great supporter of the Changemaker network of schools. And Michael is doing some fantastic work around involving young people in recognising their position within the democratic process. So it's really worth checking out what Bite the Ballot are doing. It's specifically targeted towards secondary education, but Mike has also been working with Changemaker schools in order to help schools to find ways of strengthening that sense of democracy within the schools' communities.
Quite topical with the announcement this week.
Absolutely.
So it's definitely something for schools to access there, yeah. Looking for some resources to discuss June the 8th. Now, I know if there was a competition to find the most active head teacher on Twitter, you would win hands down.
Well, thank you very much.
I don't know how you find the time, but for some head teachers I talk to, Twitter and social media is just not for them.
Right.
Now, I know you're a big advocate of social media and outward-facing communication. That's right. So what are some of the benefits for you and the school of your Twitter networks and your Twitter presence?
I think some of what I'm probably going to say harks back to a question you asked me about earlier about how do I get to this viewpoint. I find that Twitter is an amazing way to develop one's own CPD. I like the fact that you can go down different avenues and you don't necessarily have to take a linear perspective on where learning is going to come from. So on my thread, I like to connect to social entrepreneurs. I like to connect in with people who look at marketing or branding or talk about what's happening for charity workers in parts of Africa. I think it's a really brilliant way from the comfort of your own living room to explore the world remotely and also to learn about what other people are doing and to learn ideas from them. A couple of people that I've connected with, various people such as Karen Campbell, who's working with the Scottish education system. I've connected with Andy Hargreaves. I've connected with Andy Hargreaves to such an extent that when I finally met him at a meeting at the RSA, I thought we'd met before, and we were able to pick up a conversation quite quickly, even though we'd never met. I've had some really exciting things happen through connecting with people on social media. So I found out about a book called Teaming, how businesses, in fact, if I find it, that might be making sure I get the right answer. So
I'm scribbling that down now.
So okay, teaming. So teaming. Yeah. How organisations learn, innovate and compete in the knowledge economy. And it's by Professor Amy C. Edmondson, who is at the Harvard Business School. And as an example of how powerful Twitter is, I was able to just say to her, I really enjoyed your book. I think it's a fabulous book. And she tweeted me back and said, well, if you're interested in how teaming works within education, DM me your contact details and I'll send you some resources over. And that's exactly what she did. Right. So the potential to connect with other people, to have a conversation, I think one of the most exciting things that has happened is I was having a conversation with Michelle Larby when we met when you met Jenny, and we were talking about the phonics partnership that she's doing, and it was co-created with Michelle Larby, aka the Phonics Fairy. And there's a program to help with phonics, so we achieved 100% in our phonics scores last year. We have 50% of our pupils are English as an additional language, so I think that was no mean feat. But I think it is credit to the quality of the teaching and also credit to this program that Michelle Larby has devised. And I was having a... now, where have I gone with this conversation? I was having a conversation with Michelle Larby about creativity, and I happened to tweet a picture of Creative Schools by Sir Ken Robinson. I tagged Sir Ken Robinson. We ended up having a little Twitter conversation, and I was able to let him know that one of my teachers here was in his tutor group in Warwick. He remembered Emily and said, I send my regards to Emily, which of course is very exciting. And then here's my very exciting claim to fame. Sir Ken Robinson now follows me on Twitter.
Oh,
so
fantastic.
That I actually want on my gravestone.
That's probably better than my award then for the most active head teacher on Twitter. The fact that Sir Ken Robinson followed you is probably a more prestigious award.
That's right. And I was able to, and just to further that, I was able to show him that on my website, I have three quotes that reflect, or I should say on the Spinney website, we have three quotes that reflect some of our values and vision here. And one is, one of the quotes is about, is Sir Ken Robinson's, it's a short paragraph about the aims of education. And I was able to say, look, Sir Ken, your quote is on our website. And he responded back that he was very pleased to see that and very happy to see that. And the other is Yong Zhao, who said, we want an education system based on hope, not fear, one that recognises and appreciates the humanness of human beings. That's a very powerful statement. And the other one is Professor Ramon Fletcher, and he says, we can teach children that if they look after their friends, they can achieve amazing things, not just for themselves, but for all humankind. And that is a very, very powerful quotation. And another partnership that we're very proud of is with, it's a European-funded project, and it's called Seas for All. And it's social, it's successful educational actions for social cohesion and inclusion in Europe. And we are one of the pathfinder schools for this country.
Oh, excellent. You're not short of partnerships and projects. Now, I know there's something interesting coming up on the 1st of July.
That's right.
Which is another project you're involved in.
Absolutely.
Just want to tell me about, a little bit more about the Education Fest.
Yes, absolutely. So on the 1st of July, all being well, we will be having the first conference for the Cambridgeshire Festival of Education. And for those of you who follow on Twitter, you can find it on @CamsEdFest. It's exactly what it says on the tin, so @CamsEdFest, and you can also find it by my Twitter bio. And the idea of the festival is to be, let's say, to be a panacea to all of the negativity and pessimism within the educational landscape. So we are very clear that at the moment there is a lot of challenge. It's very complex. The financial constraint creates additional pressures on schools. It could potentially be a very political and polarizing place. If we know that this is true, we have two choices. We can either go down in the dumps about it, or we can try to counteract that, not in a naive sense, but recognizing that whilst this is the reality, we have some choices about how we manage that and manage our own emotions around that. And so it's an invitation to colleagues to be flamingos of hope rather than lemmings of despair. And we've taken that motif, and that's on our on the website, and we're trying to invite people, invite teachers, invite parents, invite the community to join the flamboyance and to see themselves as actively contributing towards their own teacher agency, their own professionalism, that there are choices. And importantly, it's key that we do this, it's essential that we do this for the sake of our children, our colleagues and our community.
Wonderful. Well, all of those links that you've talked about there, I'll put onto the website, so if anybody's interested, they can follow those links.
Great, thank you, John.
I want to rewind the clock a little bit, if I can.
Okay.
How did you first get into teaching?
That's a good question. I've got to think back to the 1800s or something. So how did I... Well, my mum was a teacher. She was what used to be described as a Section 11 teacher. So that was to support children that were coming back from what used to be called the Commonwealth countries. So Pakistan and other countries. And when children were coming into Stoke-on-Trent in around the 70s and 80s, I suppose. My mum was one of the teachers that helped to teach Vietnamese children and various other nationalities English. And that was there was specific money from the DfE, or whoever they were called at the time, to support that process. Over time, those teachers would probably be called EAL teachers, and my mum was and is now a retired teacher, but once a teacher, always a teacher. And so I knew growing up that with my mum being a teacher and my grandma having been a history teacher, that it was going to be a likely path for me. So I put it off as long as possible. I pursued routes through performance arts and drama, and then went on to be a TEFL teacher, teaching English as a second language in Spain and in Greece, which was a wonderful experience. And then in 1993, I decided that I'd better do the inevitable. It was something that I was passionate about anyway, and trained to be a teacher. In 1994, I was a supply teacher. I eventually got a job, and the rest is history.
What a story. It's nice.
Well,
so it was in the DNA.
It was in the DNA, yeah.
And is that all in Cambridgeshire, or is that further afield?
No, all in Cambridgeshire. Mm-hmm. So, and Cambridgeshire has been very good to me. So I've been very blessed in the opportunities that I've had. I briefly did a spell as a consultant teacher's consultant leader working with a school in a challenging situation, and I had a great opportunity to learn about leadership. I was a deputy head teacher for 5 years at St. Luke's Primary School, another excellent school in the city of Cambridge, and became a head teacher here 10 years ago.
And during that time as a teacher, are there any other teachers or senior leaders who mentored you, or who you learnt a lot from back in your early days as a teacher?
Yes, there was a teacher called Jane. She was my mentor when I first started out, and it was at the first school I was in was quite a challenging school, and she gave me some techniques to manage my own emotions so that I didn't take on board too many of the challenges of those young people who came from very complex, emotionally difficult lives. And she was able to teach me how to support the children but also not drain myself, and that was very good. So she gave me some really good insights, which I can now reflect on. At the time was about managing my own well-being, and she gave me some really good ideas about how I needed to make sure that I was resilient and I had enough quality of life so that I could turn up each day feeling ready to support the children's needs, but wasn't myself drowning.
I know that you pay that forward now in the work that you do with your own teaching staff here, but what advice would you give to any newly qualified teachers who are maybe starting their first post this September? What advice would you give them if there was something that you might have benefited from yourself? You look back when you started, if you were looking back to when you started your career, what advice would you give your former self?
Yep. I think find your mentors and be open with mentors. I think that's something that we don't do enough of. I think it would be a great skill if, I think it's a great technique if NQTs or anybody in life learned how to just gently, metaphorically or otherwise, tap somebody on the shoulder and say, I really admire or I really like where you are. I know that there's something I could learn from you. Could you help me? Could you support me? And I don't think we talk enough about people individually choosing their own mentors. Mentoring and coaching is a well-known process within the field, but more often than not, those relationships are facilitated and put together by somebody else. I think owning the responsibility about choosing your mentors is something that we could do with opening up and making it much more transparent. I'm very interested in how powerful mentors can be, the right mentor. The mentor, if you look, check it out on Wikipedia. So mentor was the person who advised, I'm trying to remember his name now. So when Odysseus travelled out on his journey, Menelaus, his son, was left at home. And mentor was the old man who advised I don't think it was Menelaus. I'm going to have to check my facts. Everybody out there, check your facts. So his son was found, or there was an old man with a stick who was the mentor. His name was Mentor, and he advised him in his father's absence as to what to do in these very difficult situations, looking after his mum and all the suitors that were around. And what we find out later in the story is that Mentor wasn't actually an old man. He was actually the embodiment of Athena, the goddess of wisdom. And if we look around and find the wise people, they can help to guide us in those very complex times. And there are some great stories out there. Kim Scott talks about being mentored by Sheryl Sandberg, and about how that can be transformative. If you allow the right people to give you the right advice at the right time, it can be a very great privilege. And I think we should all be open to that. I think we should all be going around very gently tapping people who are just that little bit further along the journey and saying, would you mind being my wise guide?
Well, you're preaching to the converted here with the work we do in schools
right.
with our health mentors.
Yes, that's right,
so,
absolutely. Yes, exactly right.
But I think that's something which we need to do more of with our own staff, so that the mentors who are doing the mentoring in schools,
yeah.
they have their own mentors within our organisation.
Yes.
And also outside the organisation.
I think it's about having a change of mindset, is that it can seem quite a hierarchical relationship if you feel that a mentor is somebody who's above you. But if you can think of it something as a linear journey, and they're just that couple of steps ahead of you, and you just want somebody to reach back and say, you know, it's this way up the mountain.
Mm.
I think we should be looking for those people who help us up the mountain.
That's really good advice. And before we move on to your journey into leadership, can you just think back to any times when you felt really proud of being a teacher? Any moments that,
oh my goodness,
that stick out?
Now you're asking. Yeah, I think so. There was a moment some years ago. So when I started out, and I had a very challenging class, and there was one particular child who I suppose now we would recognise as having high needs around attention deficit disorder, and he was very demanding in the class, very challenging as far as behaviour was concerned, but was an amazing, wonderful human being. And but he certainly helped me to earn my pennies in those weeks and months. He demanded a lot of me, as well as the other 29 other children who also needed me. But one day, probably 10 years later, I'm feeling a bit emotional about this now, I can feel, I was with the head teacher. I was a deputy later on in the journey, and I was with my head teacher, and we were in the car, and we'd just driven down a road somewhere, and she said, "Who's that following? Who's running after us in the car?" And I looked round and I recognised this young man, now grown, now 10 years later, and it was the same child. And he shouted through the window, he said, "Miss Evans," because that was my maiden name, said, Miss Evans, you are my favourite teacher. You are my favourite teacher. Mm-hmm. And he had an amazing imagination. He was a very creative, dynamic young man, had lots of, there were lots of challenges about him, but it was just great to think. I feel proud to say that although he was not, it was not easy at times, we still managed to maintain that humanity, so that when he came back and we met up, both I guess at this stage as adults, that we both had a mutual respect for each other. And I think that's really important, and a word that drives me is about those human relationships, and that humanity is, it's that human-centeredness that's really important.
And when you think back to so many special moments like that within teaching as a career and occupation, why do you think we're facing a recruitment crisis?
Oh, gosh, I think there are a number of reasons. I think it's a jolly hard job. It's incredibly demanding. I hashtag think it's the best job in the world. But that being said, I'm not sure that we really recognise the amazing job that teachers are doing. And there are so many different ways of framing this. So here's a couple of ways that I think about this. So as a parent, if you're having a birthday party in your own home for a group of seven-year-old children, and you have got to manage a group of children, you probably wouldn't imagine having 30 children in a room about the same size as a living room and a bit of an extension. And yet that's what one manages, but that's what a teacher is managing, 30 children. And in this context, you're not inviting them to a birthday party. You're inviting them to do some work that is going to be fairly demanding, that is going to challenge them, and you've got to teach them how to be literate and how to be numerate and how to be good at science and how to be good artists and so on and so forth. So that's just one part of the story. However, unlike my analogy, what you also have to do is you have to think about their emotional well-being, their safety, their relationships, their social skills, their how they're going to be civilized as human beings. You are effectively doing all of the nurturing and caring side as well as doing the teaching and education side. So I think that that is a huge job. And what I recognize is that when people come into the profession and they're doing it 24/7, it's a hard job, it's a very demanding job, and society doesn't necessarily recognize just how much people are doing and how much they're giving on a daily basis. So I think the reality is that people come into the job and they can't, and they don't stay for so long because it's overwhelming at times and it's very difficult. So I think we have a retention problem because it's a huge job. I think that status in society isn't quite as high as it should be. But, and this might be a little bit more controversial, I'm not necessarily sure that we always do our best PR. Because on the good days, it is the best job in the world. And on the bad days, it's one of the most important. And we have such a privilege in that we are creating the next society. And I think if we could sing a little bit more positively about the joys of teaching, it would be better for the profession. And that's one of the reasons why we're so keen to advocate this idea of being flamingos of hope rather than being lemmings of despair. Mm. Society needs teachers. Children need teachers. Future generations need teachers. And if there are good people out there who can do this job and who feel passionate about it and joyful about it, those are who we want in the profession. And it's up to school communities and schools' cultures to make schools great places to be, and that's the role of leadership.
That's some wise words. Moving things on a little bit, why did you choose to take the step into school leadership?
Why did I take... I think that... I suppose it's something that perhaps came naturally. And I feel it's a bit like a vocation. So I feel that I'm on the same journey. I feel that this is my purpose.
Mm-hmm. And just seeing how you interact with children, walking around the school earlier, it's obvious that you haven't lost that contact with them.
No.
And I know some head teachers feel as though that's something they're having to almost give up if right. they're moving to a leadership role.
Yeah.
But you've managed to maintain that balance.
Yeah. It's very important because I think that children are an absolute joy to such an extent that I had two of my own. But I love the optimism of children. I love their belief that anything can happen. I love their creativity, and I think our first value at the SPIN is child-centeredness. And I'm looking to work with colleagues who haven't lost that sense of what a joy childhood was. And if we know that we get a one-time-only offer for childhood, then we want it to be as treasured an experience as possible. I know for myself, as adults, one of the mainstays of conversation is, what was our school like when we were a child? So we might be sitting having a glass of Chardonnay one day, and these children will, and they'll be reflecting back on the teachers here. And I'd like to think that somewhere in the future, children at the Spinney have good memories of this place and think that there was lots of fun, there's lots of laughter. Yes, there was learning, but it was well balanced.
And along similar lines, how would you like your colleagues here to think of you when they're having a glass of Chardonnay?
My goodness, you'd have to ask them. Well, if I may say so bold, my colleagues do tend to stay, so we don't have a very high turnover. I would like to think that, in fact, one colleague did say that it's very relaxed here, but we get a lot of work done. So we do try to keep a balance. The social side is very important. Recognising that people have lives of their own at home, this is really important. Plato, the quote that is often used about Plato is, be kind, for everyone you know is fighting a battle you know nothing about. Every Monday morning we have a briefing. I put together just a one-page PDF that gathers my thoughts and reflections from the week previously and what I want us to think about for the week ahead, and it might be around a whole range of themes. But more often than not, we'll come back to some of our purpose and our values. But before we get into the meat of the learning, the meat of education, I always ask colleagues how their weekend was, anything that had happened, anything that was special, because we are people first. So we are educators as our job, but we start as human beings. It's about our lives. It's about our relationships at home. It's about the ups and downs. And I want my colleagues to know, and hopefully they do know, that if something is bothering them, that something is challenging at home, they come and talk to me about it. I'm there to help them with their supervision so that then they're able to go into the classroom and give their best selves.
Brilliant. And another point I've got down here, which I was really hoping to you'd be able to share with us, is some advice for any head teacher colleagues that might be listening. I asked earlier about a new teacher starting in September. What about somebody who's stepping up into the headship role for the first time in September? Do you have any advice for colleagues in that situation?
I'm reflecting back to my early days here 10 years ago, and I remember that feeling there isn't a Haynes manual that you can go to hidden in the drawer that says this is how you are going to be a head teacher. But what I've learned is that you just have to be authentic. It's not a role that you can put on. You just have to broadly be yourself and bring your best self, hopefully, to the party every day. But what I didn't know when I first became a head teacher is what were the important things and what were the less important things. And I was very fortunate in that I had a colleague who I could just phone up and I could say, this has come along, I don't know how high of a priority this is and what mostly needs my attention. And he was able to just say, no, that's not as important as they'd like you to think. Focus on this bit, focus on that bit. So on a really practical side, I would say, similar to what I would say about a new teacher, is don't be afraid to find your mentors. And also recognise that whilst it feels like asking something of somebody else, what's actually happening within this communication is a two-way process. Because whenever a mentor has to give advice to a mentee, they learn themselves because they're having to articulate their own learning out loud to another person, and that just reinforces their own wisdom or helps them to consider their own wisdom. And I think that's what I would advise is don't be afraid to ask, don't be afraid to DM somebody, don't be afraid to knock on their door, and it becomes a reciprocal process so that the more people who are asking for mentors and to be, then that gets passed along the line, that you're passing the baton back to somebody else, if that's the metaphor that we can use now, and then they themselves, when they get to be the head teacher, they'll know to do it to somebody else or for somebody else.
And this is exactly why I wanted to record these interviews, because I've had so many positive conversations with head teachers and school leaders in the past, and there's been so much good advice, and I just don't think there's necessarily a platform for people to learn from one another in this way.
Right.
So it's a little bit like the Twitter conversation we were talking about before, but hopefully these interviews will be focused on sharing best practice and ideas from head teachers who've been there and got the T-shirt.
So John, you've done a few of these now. Are you finding any emerging themes?
Yeah, very much so. I think the focus on the child being the centre and the teachers and the support staff has been human beings first and foremost, and functional units as a secondary factor. I think that's definitely coming through loud and clear. And the advice you've given there for head teachers about being authentic, I think that's all that is coming through loud and clear.
Right.
And people who I've spoken to, not just for this podcast series, but for during previous conversations that we've had, it's so it's when the leadership mask comes off and they just are themselves.
Mm.
That's when they tend to flourish in the role.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you some probing questions in a moment.
Were they not the probing questions?
No, that's just warming up. So
heavens.
I know you go to lots of events, and as part of a number of the projects that you're involved in, you speak at lots of events as well. But can you remember a particular presentation or hearing from somebody in particular where there's been a real trigger moment or a pivotal moment that's made you reflect or re-examine some of your philosophies or approaches?
So I wasn't, I didn't attend these, but a couple of people that I think are really inspirational to look out for their TED Talks at the moment, their TEDx Talks, is Jaz Ampar-Farr, who did an amazing TED Talk. I think that was extremely moving. I laughed and cried in almost equal measure. And the humility and the honesty just touched my spirit. And similarly, Natalie Scott, her talk again about her experience of working with the children in Dunkirk, it just tells us so much about the strength of the human spirit. So both of those ladies are very inspirational.
And they're both on my list for this interview.
Are they?
If you do series two,
okay.
I'll have
Great
to
stuff.
Ask for an introduction.
Great.
Now, changing lanes slightly,
yes.
How do you switch off from being a head teacher when you're not sitting in front of your smartphone with Twitter in the living room there? What else do you do to unwind?
Well, I've done a number of things. So in the past, I was very into martial arts.
Ah.
I did martial arts for 6 years, and I'm a black belt in Tangsudo.
Sorry, Tangsudo?
Tangsudo, yes.
Which is...
So it's a type of karate.
It's a
Korean karate. So I got as far as black belt, and I've had to do my 4 hours of black belt examination. So that was one of the things. I've played in a ukulele band. I'm called the Misspent Ukes. If you look for them on YouTube, you'll find some rather dubious films. Mm. And more recently, I've tried to reconnect with my book club buddies, and even more specifically, we've recently got a dog.
Ah.
So, new dog Bramble, who is 6 months old, is a great deal of fun and takes up a lot of time with some rather wonderful walks. So that's one of the ways that I switch off. I have two marvellous teenagers at home as well, and they're a great source of distraction and joy.
Wonderful. What breed is Bramble?
Bramble is a Scotty Cairn cross, and he looks like a small bear.
So, you mentioned books there. Have you got any... what are you reading at the moment?
Oh, gosh. Well, literally at the moment, only because I should be reading it, is The Empathy Instinct by Peter Bazalgette. I'm going over to collect it off my desk. So, The Empathy Instinct, How to Create a More Civil Society.
Okay.
So, Peter Bazalgette was the chair of the Arts Council. He's recently stepped down after 4 years. But what I'm what I'm pleased to say is that it also features a mention of the Spinney School in here. Another connection that we've recently made, and this is also named in this book, is with Miranda McKerney. And Miranda was the person who started the reading agency, but she's now started a new project called Empathy Lab. And we are a pilot school for Empathy Lab, and it's looking at how literature and stories can provoke a range of positive emotions and positive empathy that can then turn into positive action. And we're really excited about joining this project and thinking very much about how young people can be change makers for the good in society. So it links very nicely with Ashoka, which is also mentioned in the Peter Bazalgette book.
Your friends who are outside the education world, what do they think of your work and your commitments to your career?
I think I have a lot of friends that are probably within education. I don't always talk about it outside of when I'm with friends that are not in the education world, because I'm extremely passionate about it, and it can be all-consuming. Mm. I love it. I love it so much. So when I'm with people not from the education world, I perhaps talk about books or dogs and those sorts of things.
Well, it's been a pleasure. It's been a long time coming, and I'm very conscious of your time today.
No, that's so quite all right, don't worry.
You've shared plenty of time with me today with the tour and for this conversation here, so I've really enjoyed talking to you today.
Well, it's been great talking with you again, John. I'm really delighted that you've come to the Spinney, because we have met on a number of occasions in different places, so it's really nice to be able to show you the school and for you to meet the children.
And we'll have to come back for a round two at some point, because there are so many more questions I want to ask as a result of this, but we'll leave it there for now. So thanks, Ray.
Well, thanks very much, John. I've enjoyed it.